Chapter 9. Lady with a couple of children. These ladies were graceful and handsome, and it was not difficult to perceive at a glance that even their presence there had a highly beneficial influence on the patients who were grouped about them. Leaning her head against the chimney piece, with a great assumption of dignity and refinement of manner, sat an elderly female, in as many scraps of finery as Madge Wildfire herself. Her head in particular was so strewn with scraps of gauze and cotton and bits of paper, and had so many queer odds and ends stuck all about it, that it looked like a bird's nest. She was radiant with imaginary jewels, wore a rich pair of undoubted gold spectacles, and gracefully dropped upon her lap, as we approached, a very old greasy newspaper, in which I dare say she had been reading an account of her own presentation at some foreign court. I have been thus particular in describing her, because she will serve to exemplify the physician's manner of acquiring and retaining the confidence of his patients. This, apostrophe he said aloud, taking me by the hand, and advancing to the fantastic figure with great politeness, not raising her suspicions by the slightest look or whisper, or any kind of aside, to me. This lady is the hostess of this mansion, sir. It belongs to her. Nobody else has anything, whatever, to do with it. It is a large establishment, as you see, and requires a great number of attendants. She lives, you observe, in the very first style. She is kind enough to receive my visits, and to permit my wife and family to reside here, for which it is hardly necessary to say, we are much indebted to her. She is exceedingly courteous, you perceive, apostrophe on this hint she bowed condescendingly, and will permit me to have the pleasure of introducing you. A gentleman from England, ma'am. Newly arrived from England, after a very tempestuous passage. Mr. Dickens, the lady of the house. Apostrophe, apostrophe, we exchanged the most dignified salutations with profound gravity and respect, and so went on. The rest of the madwomen seemed to understand the joke perfectly, not only in this case, but in all the others, except their own, and be highly amused by it. The nature of their several kinds of insanity was made known to me in the same way, and we left each of them in high good humor. Not only is a thorough confidence established, by those means, between the physician and patient, in respect of the nature and extent of their hallucinations, but it is easy to understand that opportunities are afforded for seizing any moment of reason, to startle them by placing their own delusion before them in its most incongruous and ridiculous light. Every patient in this asylum sits down to dinner every day with a knife and fork, and in the midst of them sits the gentleman, whose manner of dealing with his charges I have just described. At every meal, moral influence alone restrains the more violent among them from cutting the throats of the rest. But the effect of that influence is reduced to an absolute certainty, and is found, even as a means of restraint, to say nothing of it as a means of cure, 100 times more efficacious than all the strait waistcoats, fetters, and handcuffs that ignorance, prejudice, and cruelty have manufactured since the creation of the world. In the labor department, every patient is as freely trusted with the tools of his trade as if he were a sane man. In the garden, and on the farm, they work with spades, rakes, and hoes. For amusement, they walk, run, fish, paint, read, and ride out to take the air in carriages provided for the purpose. They have among themselves a sewing society to make clothes for the poor, which holds meetings, passes resolutions, never comes to fisticuffs or bowie knives as sane assemblies have been known to do elsewhere, and conducts all its proceedings with the greatest decorum. The irritability, which would otherwise be expended on their own flesh, clothes, and furniture, is dissipated in these pursuits. They are cheerful, tranquil, and healthy. Once a week they have a ball, in which the doctor and his family, with all the nurses and attendants, take an active part. Dances and marches are performed alternately, to the enlivening strains of a piano, And now and then some gentleman or lady whose proficiency has been previously ascertained obliges the company with a song. Nor does it ever degenerate, at a tender crisis, into a screecher owl, wherein, I must confess, I should have thought the danger lay. At an early hour they all meet together for these festive purposes. At 8 o'clock refreshments are served, and at 9 they separate. Immense politeness and good breeding are observed throughout. They all take their tone from the doctor, and he moves a very Chesterfield among the company. Like other assemblies, these entertainments afford a fruitful topic of conversation among the ladies for some days, and the gentlemen are so anxious to shine on these occasions that they have been sometimes found practicing their steps in private to cut a more distinguished figure in the dance. It is obvious that one great feature of this system is the inculcation and encouragement, even among such unhappy persons, of a decent self-respect. Something of the same spirit pervades all the institutions at South Boston. There is the House of Industry. In that branch of it, which is devoted to the reception of old or otherwise helpless paupers, these words are painted on the walls. Worthy of notice. Self-government, quietude, and peace are blessings. Apostrophe. It is not assumed and taken for granted that being there they must be evil disposed and wicked people, before whose vicious eyes it is necessary to flourish threats and harsh restraints. They are met at the very threshold with this mild appeal. All within doors is very plain and simple, as it ought to be, but arranged with a view to peace and comfort. It costs no more than any other plan of arrangement, but it speaks an amount of consideration for those who are reduced to seek a shelter there, which puts them at once upon their gratitude and good behavior. Instead of being parceled out in great, long, rambling wards, where a certain amount of weazen life may mope, and pine, and shiver, all day long, the building is divided into separate rooms, each with its share of light and air. In these, the better kind of paupers live. They have a motive for exertion and becoming pride, in the desire to make these little chambers comfortable and decent. I do not remember one, but it was clean and neat, and had its plant or two upon the windowsill, or row of crockery upon the shelf, or small display of colored prints upon the whitewashed wall, or, perhaps, its wooden clock behind the door. The orphans and young children are in an adjoining building separate from this, but a part of the same institution. Some are such little creatures that the stairs are of Lilliputian measurement, fitted to their tiny strides. The same consideration for their ears and weaknesses expressed in their very seats, which are perfect curiosities, and look like articles of furniture for a pauper doll's house. I can imagine the glee of our poor law commissioners at the notion of these seats having arms and backs, but small spines being of older date than their occupation of the boardroom at Somerset House, I thought even this provision very merciful and kind. Here again, I was greatly pleased with the inscriptions on the wall, which were scraps of plain morality, easily remembered and understood. Such as love one another, God remembers the smallest creature in his creation. And straightforward advice of that nature. The books and tasks of the smallest of scholars were adapted, in the same judicious manner, to their childish powers. When we had examined these lessons, four morsels of girls, of whom one was blind, sang a little song about the merry month of May, which I thought, being extremely dismal, would have suited an English November better. That done, we went to see their sleeping rooms on the floor above, in which the arrangements were no less excellent and gentle than those we had seen below. And after observing that the teachers were of a class and character well suited to the spirit of the place, I took leave of the infants with a lighter heart than ever I have taken leave of pauper infants yet. Connected with the House of Industry, there is also an hospital, which was in the best order, and had, I am glad to say, many beds unoccupied. It had one fault, however, which is common to all American interiors. The presence of the eternal, accursed, suffocating, red-hot demon of a stove, whose breath would blight the purest air under heaven. There are two establishments for boys in the same neighborhood. One is called the Boylston School, and is an asylum for neglected and indigent boys who have committed no crime, but who in the ordinary course of things would very soon be purged of that distinction, if they were not taken from the hungry streets and sent here. The other is a house of reformation for juvenile offenders. They are both under the same roof, but the two classes of boys never come in contact. The Boylston boys, as may be readily supposed, have very much the advantage of the others in point of personal appearance. They were in their schoolroom when I came upon them, and answered correctly, without book, such questions as where was England, how far was it, what was its population, its capital city, its form of government, and so forth. They sang a song too, about a farmer sowing his seed, with corresponding action at such parts as 'tis thus he sows, apostrophe he turns him round, he claps his hands, which gave it greater interest for them, and accustomed them to act together, in an orderly manner. They appeared exceedingly well taught, and not better taught than fed, for a more chubby-looking full-waisketed set of boys, I never saw. The juvenile offenders had not such pleasant faces by a great deal, and in this establishment there were many boys of color. I saw them first at their work, basket-making, and the manufacture of palm leaf hats, afterwards in their school, where they sang a chorus in praise of liberty. An odd, and, one would think, rather aggravating, theme for prisoners. These boys are divided into four classes, each denoted by a numeral, worn on a badge upon the arm. On the arrival of a newcomer, he is put into the fourth or lowest class, and left, by good behavior, to work his way up into the first. The design and object of this institution is to reclaim the youthful criminal by firm, but kind and judicious treatment, to make his prison a place of purification and improvement, not of demoralization and corruption, to impress upon him that there is but one path, and that one sober industry, which can ever lead him to happiness, to teach him how it may be trodden, if his footsteps have never yet been led that way, and to lure him back to it, if they have strayed. In a word, to snatch him from destruction, and restore him to society a penitent and useful member. The importance of such an establishment, in every point of view, and with reference to every consideration of humanity and social policy, requires no comment. One other establishment closes the catalogue. It is the House of Correction for the State, in which silence is strictly maintained, but where the prisoners have the comfort and mental relief of seeing each other and of working together. This is the improved system of prison discipline which we have imported into England, and which has been in successful operation among us for some years past. America, as a new and not overpopulated country, has in all her prisons the one great advantage of being enabled to find useful and profitable work for the inmates. Whereas, with us, the prejudice against prison labor is naturally very strong, and almost insurmountable, when honest men who have not offended against the laws, are frequently doomed to seek employment in vain. Even in the United States, the principle of bringing convict labor and free labor into a competition which must obviously be to the disadvantage of the latter, has already found many opponents, whose number is not likely to diminish with access of years. For this very reason, though, our best prisons would seem at the first glance to be better conducted than those of America. The treadmill is conducted with little or no noise. 500 men may pick oakum in the same room, without a sound, and both kinds of labor admit of such keen and vigilant superintendence, as will render even a word of personal communication amongst the prisoners almost impossible. On the other hand, the noise of the loom, the forge, the carpenter's hammer, or the stonemason's saw, greatly favor those opportunities of intercourse hurried and brief, no doubt, but opportunities still which these several kinds of work, by rendering it necessary for men to be employed very near to each other, and often side by side, without any barrier or partition between them, in their very nature present. A visitor, too, requires to reason and reflect a little before the sight of a number of men engaged in ordinary labor, such as he is accustomed to out of doors, will impress him half as strongly as the contemplation of the same persons in the same place and garb would, if they were occupied in some task, marked and degraded everywhere as belonging only to felons in jails. In an American state prisoner house of correction, I found it difficult at first to persuade myself that I was really in a jail, a place of ignominious punishment and endurance. And to this hour I very much question whether the humane boast that it is not like one has its root in the true wisdom or philosophy of the matter. I hope I may not be misunderstood on this subject, for it is one in which I take a strong and deep interest. I incline as little to the sickly feeling which makes every canting liar maudlin speech of a notorious criminal a subject of newspaper report and general sympathy, as I do to those good old customs of the good old times which made England, even so recently as in the reign of the third King George, in respect of her criminal code and her prison regulations, one of the most bloody-minded and barbarous countries on the earth. If I thought it would do any good to the rising generation, I would cheerfully give my consent to the disinterment of the bones of any genteel highwayman, the more genteel, the more cheerfully, and to their exposure, piecemeal, on any signpost, gate, or gibbet, that might be deemed a good elevation for the purpose. My reason is as well convinced that these gentry were as utterly worthless and debauched villains as it is that the laws and jails hardened them in their evil courses, or that their wonderful escapes were effected by the prison turnkeys who, in those admirable days, had always been felons themselves, and were, to the last, their bosom friends and pot companions. At the same time I know, as all men do or should, that the subject of prison discipline is one of the highest importance to any community, and that in her sweeping reform, and bright example to other countries on this head, America has shown great wisdom, great benevolence, and exalted policy. In contrasting her system with that which we have modeled upon it, I merely seek to show that with all its drawbacks, ours has some advantages of its own. The house of correction which has led to these remarks is not walled, like other prisons, but is palisaded round about with tall rough stakes, something after the manner of an enclosure for keeping elephants in, as we see it represented in Eastern prints and pictures. The prisoners wear a party-colored dress, and those who are sentenced to hard labor work at nail-making or stone-cutting. When I was there, the latter class of laborers were employed upon the stone for a new custom house in course of erection at Boston. They appeared to shape it skillfully and with expedition, though there were very few among them, if any, who had not acquired the art within the prison gates. The women, all in one large room, were employed in making light clothing for New Orleans and the southern states. They did their work in silence like the men, and like them were overlooked by the person contracting for their labor, or by some agent of his appointment. In addition to this, they are every moment liable to be visited by the prison officers appointed for that purpose. The arrangements for cooking, washing of clothes, and so forth, are much upon the plan of those I have seen at home. Their mode of bestowing the prisoners at night, which is of general adoption, differs from ours, and is both simple and effective. In the center of a lofty area, lighted by windows, in the four walls, are five tiers of cells, one above the other, each tier having before it a light iron gallery, attainable by stairs of the same construction and material, excepting the lower one, which is on the ground. Behind these, back to back with them, and facing the opposite wall. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.